Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Two Johns to start, the two Johnnies, but the only thing they have in common is animal cruelty, unfortunately. John Kelly. John, good afternoon. And a warning to people. I know people get very upset when they hear of animals being treated cruelly. There's quite a significant amount of it coming in, be it puppies or be it foals or be it hares or other types of animal. John Kelly. John, what did you come across?
Good afternoon, Joe, and to your listeners. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Joe, it was on New Year's Day. New Year's Day, exactly, that's when it was. My wife, Anya, was going out for her walk, and actually, just to say that Anya, now at the minute, is in the James is getting chemo, but anyway, that's another part.
Thinking
of
her,
thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, indeed. But anyway, she was down for a walk down the road, and she came back, like, and I came in and just started walking around the floor. She said, you better ring Tracy, that's our local councillor, Tracy Dwyer.
Okay.
I was like, what's wrong? What's Tracy, what's on New Year's Day? Yeah, she says, I'm not going up the road there and there's a foal in the ditch.
Yeah.
So, dead. Oh, yeah, she said dead, yeah. Oh, Jesus, I don't believe it. But anyways, to make a long story short, we have a lot of deer around this area, Joe, coming in from the wood and down from the Wicklow Mountains and that type of thing. And I said, maybe she's mistaken. It might be a deer that was hit by a car or something. So I got on my boots and I went down the road. Yeah. And lo and behold, yeah, about a 5 or 6 month old foal dead in the ditch. Mm. And like, to look at it now was very upsetting. And I think, I looked back, the front legs were tied.
Oh my God.
On the foal, as if it was a struggle and they just tied the legs to keep it quiet. But it was very, very disturbing. And like, I would have 5 or 6 grandchildren, and they'd be out around the Christmas and after Christmas. They'd be going walks down the road. It wouldn't be a nice thing for them to see.
Absolutely.
You know, it'd be very upsetting. It wouldn't remain in their minds for a long time.
Apart from the cruelty of it, whatever happened to foal. Stay with us, John. Another John. John Power is in Dungarvan. John, this was last weekend, the 11th.
Hi, Joe. Just a little context. Myself and some colleagues are very much interested in bird watching and nature stuff. So we tend to travel around now and again. And each January, we go to Wexford just to try to catch up with whatever's around the general area. So last Saturday, our first port of call was actually the reserve at Wexford Wildlife Reserve. We arrived there possibly around 8:30, and the reserve opens around 9:00. Okay. So we went up. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the place, but there's a large observation tower.
Oh, I know it well. It's beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah. It's beautiful, fabulous
place. World-renowned.
World-renowned, with huge amounts of geese and everything else. So we're there, and we set up, because of our interest in nature, we have telescopes and binoculars and cameras, etc., videos. So we set up the thing, and we're throwing a large flock of geese and swans, and various waders and that. And quite suddenly, the whole flock took off. Now, that's not unusual, and that it could have been a peregrine coming in or a butterfly, or indeed a fox. So obviously, we would have liked to have seen the peregrine anyway, so we looked around and didn't see it. And I used my scope to see if I could pick up a fox. Mm-hmm. But what I saw actually were three. I call them young men with three dogs. I would have thought they were greyhounds, but they may have been luchers.
Okay.
And they were joined by a fourth guy. Now, they immediately started targeting the hares, and how they were doing it was with thermal imagers, which I think you understand what they are.
Yeah, we heard yesterday.
And they chased the dogs continuously, and this went on for ages. And in fact, one of the hares ran on the road immediately in front of the other reserve buildings, and they kept on chasing. Now, I would think that definitely one hare was killed, possibly two, but it's very, very difficult to see in dense cover. This went on for, I would estimate, around 45 minutes. And the men with the dogs made absolutely no attempt to hide their identities and seemed totally at ease and unconcerned as to whether they would be challenged or otherwise.
Now, well, in the regulations I read out yesterday from the National Parks and Wildlife Service, one, I was surprised that you can't actually legally hunt a hare between up to February, you think, from September to February, but one of the areas that's explicitly excluded, even if you did have a license for the gun or whatever, but is explicitly excluded, is the North Slobs in Wexford. So was there a number you could ring, John?
Well, just to speak about what you said there, it's a national hare reserve, along with being a wildfowl reserve.
Okay.
And it's managed by the National Park and Wildlife Service and Boardwalk Ireland. What did you ask me there?
What could you do when you saw these guys blatantly, not being cruel, but blatantly breaking the law? And by the way, the penalties, into them, are quite severe. Could you do anything? Was there a number you could ring or anyone you could alert?
I'll just elaborate on that for you.
Yeah.
One lady that I've met there before, she's working in the reserve. I don't know what her status is, but she joined us and she said, can you get photographs and videos of these guys? And we did. We photographed and registered the number of the car and immediately. Now, while I was there, that lady, sir, phoned the Gardaí on three occasions. I was standing next to her and she gave them everything. But as I understand it, they did not come out at any stage. Mm-hmm. And I find this absolutely amazing because it's a reserve. And I was listening to your colleague yesterday, and he was very articulate, I think it was Morris. I'm not sure whether he mentioned or not. But the Irish hare is an endemic species.
Oh, yes, indigenous.
Meaning that it only occurs in Ireland, and it's our only endemic mammal species, mm-hmm. so far as I'm aware.
Yeah, and apparently...
So they don't occur anywhere else in the world.
And traces of it have been found in Waterford, in a cave in Waterford, and dated 28,000 years ago, at least.
Yeah, and that
so you're right. But then why? Okay, take that point, and I hopefully this will remind people of the cruelty. But we still have state imposed cruelty because during the open season, 26th of September to the end of February, hares may be shot with firearms, coursed at regulated course and meetings, or hunted with packs of beagles and harriers. No specific license is needed for these activities, provided they occur within the set period of time and they don't occur within the excluded areas, which one is the slobs. But surely that's anachronous in the world we live in. There's an open season on the indigenous hare, the animal that is the oldest surviving animal species the longest surviving species in Ireland. And yet we have a legally... stated open season. This is what it says in the document. Hares may be shot with firearms, course at regulated, obviously you need a license for firearms, but course at regulated coursing meetings are hunted with packs of beagles and harriers. That's
absolutely
crazy.
I just find this absolutely amazing.
Stay with us, John. Another example, and again a warning, especially young ears. Sally Ann, what did you discover after Christmas, Sally Ann?
Hi, Joe. Good afternoon. Yeah. My son was walking last week. He was walking in the snow just down to the local shops. So it took the time span of getting a roll in the local shop. And on his way back, he came across a little dead puppy. So it was obviously taken from his mother too early as well. It wasn't fully formed or whatever. So he rang me then and asked me what to do. And I obviously, because of the snow, I was stuck up in Kildare. Yeah. So I thought about what to do. I got a shock, Joe. So my other half told me he's a farmer up there. So he said to ring the council and they'd be in touch with the dog warden and all that. And then I didn't have a number and I was panicking, you know.
Yeah, so
I went online and put up a post and the response was unbelievable. Loads of people wanted to help, you know, but I did get in touch with the council. And the guy met my son and took the puppy away. And when they went to get him, one of the girls helped in that as well. The animal researcher, Carlow SPCA. She took one of the pups away, and then they found a bag of pups as well. It's the same litter. So there was a good few of them. I don't know how many, but yeah.
But do you think
so they were still warm, Joe, huh?
They'd all been killed.
Yeah, yeah. Took from the mother before their time and still warm.
And dumped.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, callously. In the space of, I'd say, 20 minutes. On a pathway in
so
beautiful view of
the kids. The bag wasn't there when your relative was walking to the shops, or it was there when he was walking back?
Yeah, but what he saw was a pup that obviously, I don't know how it got out of the bag, and there was a blood trail into the field, Joe. So he went with the council worker and they checked the field, and there was no sign of other pups, but they did see a carrier bag, plastic carrier bag with two or more pups in it. Now my son didn't want to look, Yeah, he's 20, but he's into nature. Absolutely horrible.
Well, was he thinking that one of the pups might have actually survived for a few minutes and crawled out of the bag?
That's what we thought.
Oh, and my God.
And you know what the funny thing was, Joe? Because when I went back to Carlow, I was walking to the shops with my son, and I said, is that where you... There was a horse taken away from that field as well. It's sort of common ground. And there's a notice up there that the horse was in bad conditions in the snow. It said the council took the horse away last week in the snow, my son saw them take it away. And then I said to my son, where was the dead puppy that had been out of the bag? And he said, around the corner. And around the other side of the corner, was the bag. So I don't know, but I said, would the pup have walked? And he said, no, the feet were not fully formed. They were like fetus or whatever, you know. But he looked nearly at his time. Size are in your hand, you know. I had a rescued pup, Joe, so I had my dog was the size of my hand when I got him, you know.
Apart from the cruelty to the poor animal, to the fanciest little puppies.
Absolutely shocking.
The effect on people. Stay with us, Sally. And John, you mentioned, John Kelly, to be clear, because of two John, is... The foal, was the foal microchipped?
No, that's, I believe it was brought, as I said, Tracy, our local councillor, got in contact with the council, and it said they weren't sort of responsible. It was the animal welfare. So it was there for about 8 or 9 days, Joe. And apparently a lorry came. I missed it. I was watching the window every day, down the road, up the road.
Okay.
But it got sort of away. I was seeing it. But apparently the animal wasn't checked to see if it was chipped.
Apparently it was there. Was it there 5 days?
So there about 7 days, Joe. I'd say at least seven. Yeah. At least 7 days. It brought me back, Joe, to the RT investigates with that abattoir over in Strathen.
Did anyone scan the foal for a microchip?
I believe not.
Okay. And Kilcare, can I just see just on my screen now? Kildare County Council told us they didn't scan to see if it was scanned for a microchip, because the laws on microchipping equines, and that obviously includes a lot of animals, and that's what they call it in the Act, are pretty strict. You must ensure that an equine animal under his or her responsibility is identified with a valid equine passport within 12 months after the date of birth and before the animal leaves the establishment of birth for a period exceeding 30 days. The equine passport must be submitted within 6 months of the foal being born, and the implementation of a microchip by a registered veterinary practitioner is necessary for the submission. So in other words, the chip has to be inserted within 6 months. Now, this is the, and I go back to the legal hunting of hares in Ireland. These are the penalties. What are the consequences? This is from the Department of Agriculture. What are the consequences of not adhering to these rules? A number of enforcement tools under the European Union Animal Identification and Tracking Regulations of 2023. Relatively recently, a person who's convicted of an offence under these regulations, okay, no microchip and obviously cruelty, A person who's convicted of an offence under these regulations, and remember, you can prove the absence of a microchip much easier than you can prove cruelty. But a person who's convicted of an offence under these regulations on summary conviction to a Class A fine, or on conviction on indictment to a fine not exceeding 500,000 euro, €500,000, or to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 3 years or both, which to me sounds about right if the, for that level of cruelty. But the sanctions, are very strong. Up to 3 years in prison, up to €500,000 of a fine.
We had problems here, Joe, as well, back a couple of years with people dumping mattresses and beds and that type of thing along the road here. And then the council opened up the dumps on a special day during the year that you could take in 5 or 6 mattresses for free.
Okay.
So that since that now, we don't have any of that. But the fall, though, that was the fall thing was a bit much.
Yeah, I'll go back. It wasn't scanned for a microchip, but given the consequences of not having a microchip, I thought that would be number one on the agenda. But anyway, the National Parks and Wildlife Service, going back to you, John Power, who's in Dungarvan, the National Parks and Wildlife Service said that the NPWS has received numerous reports of illegal hunting of hares in the vicinity of Wexford Wildfowl Reserve on Saturday, January 10th. This is you, John. Well done. This matter is now under investigation, and the NPWS cannot comment further on the specifics of the case. But anyway, it's under investigation.
Well, Joe, we have video and we have photographs, which are very high quality. Now, some of them have been sent to the National Park and Wildlife Service. And I spoke to one of their representatives last Monday, and three of us at least, or maybe more, are quite willing to give statements and appear in court. It seems it is an offence to hunt on the reserve, as I understand.
Yeah, of course it is.
But I've heard nothing back.
Okay, well, we wait and see. But well done for bringing it to our attention and bringing it to the attention of the authorities. John Power, Dungarvan, Sally Ann Sullivan is around Carlo, and John Kelly, who told us he's in Kildare, as he is. Thank you. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Two short mentions before I go on to Francis Conroy. Francis is in St. Teresa's Nursing Home on Dublin Road in Thurles, and where she's been looked after absolutely brilliantly. And tomorrow, Francis Conroy will be 100 years of age. Congratulations, Francis. Have had loads of communication for your extended family. They all say you listen to Liveline religiously every single day. So thank you, Francis. Recipe for a long life. And we wish you all the best. And you're going out tomorrow. So I think it's to the, is it to the Anner Hotel in Thurles? So the Anner Hotel has been warned. Francis Conroy and her family will be descending tomorrow. And it will be a wonderful, wonderful day to mark 100 years. Get the balloons out. 100 years. Well done, Francis. And the second thing I should say is on, again, another man from that part of the country, on Sunday night on The Meaning of Life, it's Ronan Tynan. Now, people, Ronan Tynan, first of all, is the most accomplished Irish Paralympian ever. And he's also a singer. He's actually performed in every major venue in the world. But he actually, given the Jimmy Carter's funeral last Friday, he's actually performed at the funeral in Washington, the National Cathedral in Washington, for three separate American presidents at their obsequies. But Ronan talks on The Meaning of Life on Sunday night at 10:30 on RT television about that incredible incident. I was jaw-dropped when he told me about it. That a little throwaway remark, a very little Irish remark, actually, in private, was taken up and exploded all over the United States of America. And he was basically cancelled. And he talks about how the effect it had on his health and how his faith at the end of the day helped him. Now, when I say helped him, I mean helped him in terms of his life, because when he was cancelled in New York and thereabouts, he lost all his income, lost all his work, and was spat on the street. And he'll tell you why on Sunday night on The Meaning of Life. Okay, let's go back to the hair, the Irish hair. Dr. Fiona Beglane. Fiona, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Okay, you're a lecturer in archaeology in Atlantic Technological University, which is on our west coast, obviously. And you're a zoo archaeologist. One of our earlier callers, John, he said about the history of, is there an indigenous Irish hare, Fiona?
There is. The Irish hare has been here for at least 28,000 years.
Wow.
And it's a native species, and it's slightly different to the hares that you get in other countries as well.
Okay.
It's thought to be completely isolated genetically from other hares in other countries.
And do we know how they got here in the first place 28,000 years ago?
Well, Ireland would have had quite a wide range of different species at the time. So this is during the period of the Ice Ages, and there's all sorts of animals. There's bears and red deer and giant Irish deer and wolves and lynxes and cave hyenas and all sorts of things, mammoths. So there was a whole range of species, and they basically would have effectively just walked into the place.
Okay.
The sea levels would have been a lot lower because the ice caps were much, much bigger. They found their way here.
So they didn't get here by Ryan Hare. No,
they walked.
But how can we verify 28,000 years, Fiona?
We use radiocarbon dating, which is a way of basically looking at the type of carbon that's in all the cells that make up our bodies, bits of tree, bits of any animals, any kind of organic material has got carbon in it. And by looking at this carbon and analysing that, we can tell how old something is.
Now, Morris mentioned yesterday that the hare in question, or hares, I presume it's just one, was found in a cave. What was a hare doing in a cave, so to speak?
Well, it was probably dragged in there by something like a hyena or a wolf or something, because hares would normally be outside in the grass, obviously. But it was probably captured by a predator and dragged in there to eat.
And why is a cave, has it got particular characteristics that would facilitate the preservation of bones or whatever?
Yeah, definitely. Because our bones are made up of calcium, caves are a good place to find bones, because caves are usually in limestone areas, and limestone is made of calcium as well. So that protects the bone and it stops it disintegrating over time.
So would the likes of yourself, archaeologists, would you be especially interested in caves?
We would. There's a couple of people, including one of my colleagues here in Sligo, who are specialists in caves who particularly look at the archaeology of caves, yeah.
Now, I presume with those numbers, those dates, I presume the hare was here before we were.
Yeah, the oldest definite evidence that we've got for people is about 12,500 years ago. But there's some possibility that the people were here before that. The jury's still a little bit out about that.
Okay. But they've been here a long, long time.
Yeah, definitely. Since the Ice Age, anyway.
It's just incredible. Incredible. Yeah. By the way, I presume you're following, Fiona, the situation in Scotland with the release of four lynx into the wild. Now, the four lynx were captured fairly quickly.
Mm.
Now, you probably saw the different theories. One of them, you know, there is a campaign for rewilding parts of Scotland with lynx.
Mm.
Mm. Were there lynx in Ireland? I don't mean the deodorant. Was there lynx in Ireland?
Yeah, if you get yourself down to the shops, you can get yourself.
Sorry, I didn't mean that. Okay.
There was lynx in Ireland a long time ago, back in the early part of the Holocene, which is the last 10,000 years ago. There was lynx, and before that as well, during the Ice Age, there was. You know, large predators and people don't mix very well. It might be a possibility in Scotland because they've had the Highland clearances, so they have whole vast areas where there's no houses or no people. But somewhere like Ireland, I don't think it's gonna work.
And when was the last wolf in Ireland? Do you know? I'm going off message here. But given that we're talking, I thought the lynx story was fascinating. A lot of people did because, on the one hand, people said, were they pets, and then the other hand said, no, there is a campaign for rewilding with lynx, and somebody might have just bought two couples and put them into, but they lasted, I think, 24. One of them has died subsequently, unfortunately. They lasted about 48 hours before they were captured easily with food. So they were fairly domesticated. So
they wouldn't have survived. They wouldn't have been used to hunting for themselves,
And wolves, the last wolf in Ireland.
The last wolf in Ireland was in the 18th century. That's the last recorded death of a wolf, but they would have been relatively rare before that still. You know, if you go back to prehistoric times, there would have been a lot more, but people and wolves haven't really got on well, so people have generally tried to get rid of the wolves over time.
Even though they are, as you know, there is a strong argument in terms of the circle of life and the predation, that a wolf is part of the circle. But stay with us there, for a sec, because Patricia Blade. Patricia is in Carlo again. Patricia, what did you witness?
Well, I was in, I went for a walk early one morning. It was during the pandemic, you know, we were allowed to go places, but not too far. And there's lovely gardens in Carlo called Altamount Gardens.
Yes.
And this would have been around about kind of 8:30, 9:00. But the only people actually in the gardens were the gardeners, you know, the lads doing it. So I walked along, and there was a lovely lake, and I was walking along the lake, and suddenly two hares appeared out of nowhere. Okay. Now, they were not interested in me, and they just kept... I kept walking, and all they were doing was running around me, just running around, running around. And you kind of stop, and you take a breath, and you go, whoa, I'm never going to experience this again. It really was something magic. Joe, I could actually maybe have put my hand out and touched one of them, that they were that close to me.
And Patricia, were they almost dancing around you?
Probably. I think it was actually, they were probably a mating dance.
Okay.
They were ignoring me. They weren't afraid of me.
Okay.
And hares usually would be kind of, they'd be nervous of humans anyway, with good reason.
But they were moving and were dancing, because yesterday we heard that the female hare, can adopt a boxing stance almost, if she's not interested in the advances.
Oh no, these two are chasing one another.
Ah, okay. So they must.
That's why I kind of thought, you know, they're going to mate because they're just ignoring me completely. They weren't. I mean, because they came out of nowhere. And the other thing was, when I got back to the house, the Altamount house, I was talking to one of the gardeners, and I said, God, I said, I've had this experience with two hares.
Yeah.
And he said, they're a bit of a nuisance around here, because he said, we plant plants and they dig them up again.
Okay.
But it was just, I was just saying to my husband, it's one of these experiences that when I'm old now, but when I'm really old and I'm thinking back on life, that'll be one of the things I'll remember.
And then would you remember it? And you'll give a vivid description, Patricia. And people will say, "Are you sure?
Okay, of course you are.
They weren't interested in me.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the last wolf killed in Ireland, in County Carlow, in Mount Leinster.
Okay.
Yeah. Because one of the villages, they've put up a kind of a statue of a wolf. It's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, have they? Up in near Mount Leinster, near...
Yeah.
St. Mullins. Okay. Yeah. Stay there, Patricia. Fiona, do you know why the two hares were dancing around Patricia?
As she said, it's probably part of the mating thing that they were getting interested
well,
in each
dancing,
other.
Well, dancing yeah. is part of the mating ritual, isn't it? That's what we have to mangles. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we have nightclub. Yeah. Yes, okay. And is there, and Fiona, is there, given that they've been with us for so long and they were on our original coinage going way back, are there myths and lore and stories around the hair? Good luck, bad luck, where they're buried, where they're found. You mentioned, I think, at one stage they were found in the Burren. There's a megalithic tomb in the Burren.
That's right. There's a place called Park Nabinia. It's a court tomb in the Burren. And it was excavated back around the year 2000 by Carlton Jones. And he sent me the animal bones that were from the excavation, and I started to look through them, and there were literally thousands of hair bones in amongst them. Normally you might find one or two, you know. What we found was that there's two chambers in the tomb, and in one of the chambers the hares were missing their front legs. The front legs had been taken off before they'd been put into the tomb. And the other chamber, they had all their body parts. But we couldn't work this out, and we radiocarbon dated them, and they were Neolithic. They were 5,500 years old, so from the Stone Age. And they were associated with human remains that were also in the tomb as well. Mm-hmm. And we came to the conclusion that it was something a little bit like the lucky rabbit's foot, that the idea of the lucky hare's foot, the lucky rabbit's foot. So hares and rabbits in mythology and folklore, they get combined together, and people are kind of interchangeable between them. They've got these associations with, you know, the lucky rabbit's foot. Mm. That goes right back at least to Roman times, and in France. They're associated with fertility, with spring and renewal, and that's where the Easter Bunny comes from. The Easter Bunny was originally a hare and not a rabbit. They're associated with things like being tricksters, being crafty creatures, wily sort of crafty creatures. So things like Bugs Bunny and Brer Rabbit, they're always living by their wits. They're kind of avoiding the farmer or whatever.
I was reading last night, I said they can achieve speeds up to 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they,
The design of their legs, the actual shape of the bones in the legs is very similar to the shape of the bones in a horse, because they're designed to be speedy creatures, or they've evolved into being speedy creatures.
And hares don't live in burrows like bunnies. They live in the open, so to speak.
That's right.
And when they fear predators, they remain extraordinarily still, which is, and they can camouflage to a certain extent. But the main protection they have against predators is their speed.
Yeah, they'll outrun things,
Just except when mankind is behind the dog or the lurcher or the greyhound and chasing the poor thing. Say there, Fiona. This is Dr. Fiona Beglain from the Atlantic. Are you based... Atlantic is Sligo, Westport, Galway. Isn't it the amalgamation of the... Three or four colleges, isn't it, Fiona?
That's right, yeah. So I'm based in Sligo.
Elizabeth Daunt White. Elizabeth.
Hello, Joe.
You had a pet. Who had a pet hare?
Well, no, my father. I have a memory of my father's cousin having a pet hare in Black Rock when I was a child back in the 60s. I just have this memory of the hare sitting up on a windowsill in their hallway. But I rang another cousin earlier, and she doesn't remember the hare being there at all. But I'm almost 100% certain the hare was a pet hare.
And did he have a name?
I don't have a name, and I was hoping she would, but she didn't. So I'm kind of, half wondering, do I have the memory wrong, or is it a story from when I was a child or something?
We heard some stories yesterday of... hare becoming domesticated. Not many of them now, not as much as the bunny rabbit, but Fiona, can you come in there? Can they become domesticated, so to speak?
Well, they can become tame, definitely.
Tame, okay, tame. So,
yeah, so that they'll maybe let you feed them or something. If any animal, if it's around people from an early age, it's going to be used to them. But you couldn't take an adult one from the wild and tame
of course,
it. But
yeah.
If you took a young one, you could probably...
And Fiona, we heard yesterday a story of the tame hare mating with a rabbit in the household.
Oh, well, I don't think it would produce any offspring, but
they might be getting interested.
Yeah, maybe.
But that hasn't happened generally because there'd be a different species now, wouldn't there?
That's right, yeah. So normally they wouldn't be interested in each other, but maybe if there's no other mates to choose from...
Yeah, apparently that was the situation. That hare had his eye on the cat as well at one stage.
Be like Br'er Rabbit.
the hare was putting on the links looking for it. He was ready to go out to Mangos to seek it. Anyway... Fiona, last question. Have you gone into those caves looking for bones? Is that what you do?
Well, I wouldn't go actually looking for the bones as such, but what would happen is if an archaeological excavation's taking place, then they'll find the bones as part of that, and they'll also find maybe bits of pottery and bits of stone tools and things like that. And all of the material that comes from the excavation gets bagged up and then sent to specialists in that particular field. So the pottery goes to the pottery person, the bone goes to the bone person, and so on. So the material would arrive to me. Sometimes it's a jiffy bag and sometimes it's a van. It just depends.
Well, what is the oldest set of bones you ever received, do you know?
The oldest thing I've ever had was a student brought me a tooth that had been found in a cave in Wales, and she said her grandmother had found it, and her grandmother had been an archaeologist. So I looked at this tooth and I thought, well, it's a carnivore, it's not bear, it's not wolf, what could it be? And I looked into it, and it was cave hyena, and it went right back to the Ice Age. It was a huge tooth, really vicious, sharp tooth for ripping meat apart, basically.
So many thousand years are we talking there? The hare is 28,000.
Yeah, it would be something similar, kind of 30,000 years ago, probably, something like that.
And what about the phrase, let the hare sit? That's a well-known phrase. It was a well-known phrase in Irish politics, Fiona. I think it was going back to Charlie Haughey's time. And there was a general election on. General election on, and there was all the results are coming in. And Des O'Malley, another fine politician, he would have been the anti-Haughey faction in Fianna Fáil. And they were, as the results were coming in, Des O'Malley was talking to another successful Fianna Fáil candidate who would have been anti-Charlie Haughey, if my memory serves me correctly, and the interlocutor, I think, was Dr. Brian Farrell, very famous, not just political scientist, but a journalist here in RTE. And Brian said to Des O'Malley, do I detect that the two of you are conspiring against your leader? And Des O'Malley said, we let the hare sit. Anyway, well, and by the way, how'd you get interested in archaeology, Fiona?
I don't know. I've always been interested in it.
And where are you from originally? What part of Sligo? What part of Sligo are you from originally?
Well, I'm kind of from Sligo via London, basically. I was sort of brought up between the two.
Okay. Well, it's great talking to you. And I I've long time. I know you mentioned the feet of the hare, so to speak, and the rabbit's foot as a people used to around their neck, but I don't think they do it now. I don't think people
still do. You see them sometimes hanging from the mirrors in cars. That seems to be where they are these days. But there's this kind of association with healing as well. That if you would strap it to strap it to a wound, it would help, and things like that. So there's great belief in hares. Yeah.
Okay, let me quickly go back to Sligo. Sheila Layden, Sheila.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, who did you have, so to speak? You had a hare.
We had a pet hare, yes.
Yes.
For over 2 years, and unfortunately, he got pneumonia, but I can explain how that happened. My husband was up in his home place in Roscommon on Good Friday.
Right.
Back, I think it was 81.
Yeah, okay.
And his dog, a Springer Spaniel, brought in this tiny little thing in his mouth. And my husband brought him home, and we didn't know what to do with him. All we could get, this was back in the day in Good Friday, where nowhere was open.
Okay.
So we had a doll's bottle. All we could feed him with was a doll's bottle. And on the Saturday, then we got the special milk. And he just grew. He thrived and he grew and grew. And he never wanted to feed himself.
Okay.
You had to warm his milk.
Yeah.
Yeah, warm his milk in a full baby's bottle, put a little bit of sugar in it, and he would wait there and he would be scraping at your legs as the, waiting for the milk, and he'd just guzzle it down. But he was absolutely fabulous. He was actually in, there was a story about him in the Irish Press one Sunday.
And what did you call him, Sheila?
Well, you see, my son was very young at the time.
Okay.
Bunny is what he called him.
Okay. talk about confusing the poor animal.
And we went to London in 1982 for my sister's wedding.
Yes.
And a lady that I work with, she took him for 2 weeks. Now, he was so tame with us, but he was wild to everyone else.
Wow.
And we collected him when we came home, and she called about, I'd say, 2 months later.
Okay.
And when she sat in the settee, as soon as he heard her voice, he just jumped up on her lap.
Wow.
He remembered her voice. He was such a lovely, gentle animal. And when I hear the stories now of the way they're being treated.
Horrific. Yeah, let's remind ourselves exactly where all this started, the hunting of the hare, and then the legal hunt, the state-sanctioned hunting of the hare as well. And hare, Bunny died of pneumonia. What he went out with his hair wet, despite his mother telling him, do not go out of his house with your hair wet, you'll get pneumonia.
Well, you see, he always came in at night. We got a special cage made in the back garden, with the spikes on the corners, and we could move it around so he could eat the grass, and he had dry porridge. But he always came in at night. But this night was thunder and lightning, and he would not come in. And I think the thunder frightened him, and you see that he jumped the walls, and he was gone. And we spent a whole week looking for him, and he was sighted in so many different places. And eventually, after a week, he came back. Almost to our house, a neighbour spotted him.
Brilliant.
And came to the door and said, I think that's your hare. And my husband went down and caught him, and he came out of wherever he was hiding. And we said, we knew he was breathing heavily.
Okay.
And we were going to bring him to the vet the next morning. And when we got up, he was dead.
Ah.
So clearly he had pneumonia. Yeah.
Okay.
But I remember my father-in-law, he wasn't at all happy that we had a hare, because he reckoned they were unlucky to have them in the house.
Oh, I didn't ever hear that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't know where this came from, but anyway, that's the way he thought. And it's funny, about 2 months after he died, this man landed to the house from Italy.
Okay.
He had seen the story about the hare, and he wanted to do a story on him, but sure, he had just died 2 months previous. He actually came over to Monaghan because there was a wild goose that came to Monaghan every year to the same female, and she hatched out her eggs, and he went back home to I think it was maybe Norway or Sweden or somewhere like that. But he came to research about him, and he drove from Monaghan down to Sligo to see our hair. And of course, that was in the days where there was no mobile phone, so he had no way of contacting us. In fact, we wouldn't even have had a house phone at the time, because if you remember,
back in the day, the
wait for the house phone was years. But we still have the pictures of him on the wall.
And where are Bunny's bones? Because Fiona is in Sligo as well. She might be on her way to you over the weekend. Where's Bunny buried?
I'll tell you where he was buried. The actual St. Brendan School is actually built on the grounds where he was buried.
They built the school over Bunny.
Yeah.
Okay.
We cried after him.
Ah, God.
We were so upset, yeah.
And what age do you reckon he was when he died, Sheila?
We knew exactly how old he was when we got him, because he was just a few weeks old.
Yeah, okay.
I'd say he was about 2.5.
Okay. Yeah. And Fiona...
And of course, he would have lived a lot longer only for... getting pneumonia.
Yeah,
only for getting out.
Okay, thanks.
And he probably... So, no, it's. I just said I'd share nice story
lovely.
About...
Yeah, yes, great story. Yeah. Thanks, Sheila.
Yeah.
And God rest Bunny. Fiona, how long can a hare live for, do you know?
Oh, I'm not entirely sure. A few years, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
But most hares would die very young. You know, most of them don't survive their first year. About 3/4 of them die in the first year.
Why?
Predators?
Predators
and... maybe they're weak when they're born.
Patsy Carty is in Meath. Come in, Patsy.
Yeah, I just listened to you there, Joe, on the story of hares. My father always told me if a hare crossed a path, it was always very classed as very unlucky.
Okay.
Mm. And then he told me a story about a priest that used to be on, he had a pony and cart. And a priest crossed, the hare crossed in front of him.
Yeah.
He'd get out with the cart and he'd walk around the cart 3 times. And get back into the cart to say it was unlucky if he didn't do that.
So the priest saw a hare ran across the road.
It ran across in front of him, yeah.
So the padre stopped his carriage, his horse and cart.
He'd get out of it and walk around the carriage 3 times and get back into it then. I'd done it myself without playing golf.
Okay.
The hare ran across in front of me. I'd walk around it. The bogey 3 times.
Okay, and as we know...
Lads used to be looking at me and think I was mad.
Okay, well, they're believed to have a connection with the other world, symbol of abundance, prosperity and good fortune to the Celts. Dr. Fiona Beglane, thanks indeed. And Patsy Carty, good to meet you, Margaret. Patsy, Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Murphy, Joe. Joseph.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are
off you?
You
go. You have a story about the hare. What happened 50 years ago? You were driving.
Yes, I was driving in northwest Cork, and I was driving home on a Saturday night from a neighbour's house where I had visited for a few hours, and it was quite late, probably in around 12, maybe 12, 30 at night time, but at the back end of November, it was very wet, damp night. So on my way home, this hare jumped out in the road in front of me from my right.
Yes.
And funny enough, he was running in front of the car just where the lights were shining on the road, just exactly that spot. So I stayed a good distance from him. I did not want to kill him because I was always told that it was bad luck to kill a hare.
Okay.
And so I drove along for maybe half a mile. So I came to a T junction. I was turning left. Turning from my own home place, and I was on the main road then, as we would call it, the main road from Newmarket to Bally Desmond at the time, and so this hare anyway turned with my car and ran again and the lights were shining in the road at around 45 miles an hour.
Okay.
So, you know, I kept the distance from him, so then after about half a mile, 3/4 mile, I would be turning up my own laneway. But I decided anyway to check him out to see how long he would keep that pace.
Right.
And he ran for probably further two and a half miles. And then he began to slow down and getting very tired.
But you're saying the hare kept up with the car?
He stayed in front of the car.
Wow.
That, 35 miles an hour thereabouts, you know.
And with his little legs, he still kept going for what, 3 miles?
About 2.5 miles, I was. Yes, 2.5 miles or thereabouts. Maybe 3 miles.
Isn't that incredible? They are incredible.
Yes, so he slowed down, and eventually he just disappeared in a gapway into a field, and I had passed a junction about maybe 30 yards prior to that, so I decided to reverse my car, and I was driving a little mini car at the time, and those old mini cars, they had the battery in the boot of the car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I put the car into reverse, everything, the car cut out, lights went out, everything. No, I had no ignition, nothing. So I decided, jeepers, I better check the battery, that's the only thing. I was in the middle of the road, so I hopped out into the same night, because quite wet, but I opened the boot of the car, and there was the lead off, the positive lead was off the battery,
Yeah.
So it just had popped off it for some reason, even though it had never before done that.
And are you making, pardon the pun, are you making a connection there, Joe, with the hair?
I was actually, because I put the lead back on and popped into the car, started up, lights came on, everything. So I reversed and went home. So the following morning, I was telling my parents at the breakfast time about the strange happening the night before, And my father, God rest him, said, you shouldn't have followed that here for that length of time. And I said, why? I didn't tell him. I said, I didn't. I stayed well back from him. I was just curious to see how long he would stay running at that pace, And he said, that here was a spirit from the other world.
Good luck.
Of course, I told him, about the strange incident of the battery. That was the connection, And, to this day, I can vividly remember and recall that, So it's curious that you've been talking about here the past couple of days, because I listen to your program most days on the road when I'm out on the road,
He was some hair, wasn't he? At the speed he was going, he should be in Herr Lingus or in the Herr Olympics. Thanks, Joe. By the way, talking about things that are dying out in mythology, I mentioned yesterday there was a letter pointed out to me in the Irish Times. As only the Irish Times can. There's a great quirky letter from a man called Endicott in Armagh, and he said, I was on a train recently full of Canadian tourists, and they were looking out the window of the train, and they were totally bemused, fascinated by clothes hanging on a clothesline, because apparently on that side of the Atlantic and the other side of the Atlantic, they don't wash clothes outside. And then it was pointed out, maybe that is dying out in Ireland as well. And Mildred Byrne is in Loch Linn in County Roscommon. As long as you're around, Mildred, that age-old tradition will never die, will it?
Well, I hope it won't.
Because you love it. You love hanging out the sheets on the line.
Well, I tell you, Joe, you wouldn't hang out many sheets last week or the week before Christmas. They'd be in the neighbour's house. But there's a difference between drying your clothes inside and drying them outside. So there's a totally, totally different smell and lovely freshness on your clothes if you get the lovely day like today. Today is such a beautiful day.
Lovely, great drying out today. Is the clothesline dying out? Is the clothesline dying?
No, not at all.
What about tumble dryers and these laundromats and every petrol station has these big dryers and washers, and it's to make it so easy.
Not alone the clothesline, Joe, but the hedge. What about the hedge? Should the hedge was twice as good as the clothesline, for God's sake.
Oh, you throw the clothes on the hedge.
Oh, yeah, and the socks. And then you'd be missing 5 or 6 socks.
But come back to the clothesline. Had you a ritual around the clothesline? Given we're talking about ritual. Had you a ritual around the clothesline, Mildred?
You wouldn't. You'd be damn glad to get out and get the clothes up and back in again. Never mind your ritual. What kind of a ritual?
Would you be looking out the window at the sky? Would you be able to predict if it was a good there was good drying out?
Uh, Larry, now you'd know very well. Yeah. You'd know very well if the day was going to be nice or lovely. And then some days, this time of the year, like you'd keep an eye out for a quick shower, you know, keep an eye out of it. But the Lord saves your clothes dried on the line. Totally, totally different to these old tumble dryers. Should they drive you up the wall? You mightn't be able to put them on the bed at all after you come out there. No, the clothesline never will die. Never, 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 never. And the loveliness, and just, I hope it doesn't. And you see all the women, you know, women, well, the young women, I don't know what they'd be doing now. I don't know what they'd be doing. But the elderly ladies that used to be around, and you'd be driving into town, and you'd see the lovely, lovely line of clothes and them flying in the wind. It was lovely. I hope it never dies out.
And there's a method, isn't it? There is a system to what you hang in sequence on a clothesline. Am I correct?
Well, yeah. It would
have to look well. You wouldn't...
No. You wouldn't just dump them up. No, you couldn't dump them. No. You'd have to have your tea towels and your towels.
Yeah, together, yes.
Then your sheets kind of folded.
Yeah.
Sheets kind of folded. So
okay,
on the line, so that it would look good. And pray to the Almighty Jesus that the line would stay up there and that it wouldn't fall down. And that you'd have to bring them in again and wash them
And your smalls wouldn't end up in Mrs. Gilhooly's garden. That's what
Well, I'm lucky in this joke where I'm living. Nobody will see my smallies, so it's all right. The only one that has seen my smallies is, as you were talking all day yesterday, is the hare or the rabbit or the pheasant. That's the one that has seen my smallies. You wouldn't be bothered about putting out, I'd have no problem putting out my smallies, because nobody'd see it.
Yeah, you'd be proud of them. And Mildred, you know, there was two phrases. Well, we only ever hear the one phrase, did you turn off the immersion? Isn't the other phrase in Ireland, you might get a call or a shout or whatever, quick, take in the washing.
Well, if you were home, supposing you were home, it'd be grand and lovely and all that sort of thing. But supposing many a time you'd put out the clothes and you'd put them up great and you'd be delighted and they were lovely and all that sort of thing. And you might go to your class or something and you'd come home and the love for Jesus, there was no worse than when I started and I'd have to do it all over again. But we're blessed in the sense that you know, we're around about and we now we're going to get, like a day like today, an hour to get your clothes dry. I don't know what it's like in Dublin, but down here, it's absolutely beautiful.
We're always hanging out our dirty washing in Dublin. We do little.
Well, that is the truth, Joe.
Is there anything, Mildred, you wouldn't hang on the line? Would you hang a big, heavy, wet Aran sweater on the line?
Well, now it's a funny thing you should ask about an Aran sweater, because I went into the cleaners today in Castlereagh and I said to the girl, is there any way you'd do you clean Aran jumpers? Yeah. Because the last time I brought an Aran jumper in to the cleaners, it came out, you'd fit three into it.
Okay.
It was so big.
Okay.
So you wouldn't know. No, there's where the hedge comes in, Joe.
Ah.
There's where the hedge comes in. You'd put, if you wash the Aran jumper or the cardigan, you'd put a towel on the hedge and you'd lay out your Aran jumper or cardigan on the towel on the hedge. And it was, provided it was safe and sound, so long as the crows or the pigeons didn't come along.
Well, of course. And Mildred, finally, would you be a plastic peg woman or a wooden peg woman, so to speak?
Oh, God, I'd be a wooden peg woman. I'd be a wooden peg one. I know. Them plastic ones.
Why? Why is a wooden peg superior?
Well, they're better for the clothes, and they don't leave any marks on the clothes, and they don't leave the mark of the peg on the clothes. Plastic ones are horrible, and they're leave them out for a day or two, and they're green. No, I'd be a wooden woman. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
stay with us. I need to take a break, and then Mary Concannon wants to come in. Stay with us, Mildred. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And the clothesline is open now, 0818 715 815. Mary Concannon, the clothesline. You say Canadians. What's it got to do with Canadians?
No, I deal with a lot of Canadians. I work as a tour guide. So okay. When you're driving around Ireland, they're just amazed at the clotheslines, amazed that we put clothes out when it's windy and so on.
Why?
And then one day they asked me, well, I don't know, Joe, they don't do it back home. Okay. And one day they asked me and they said, do you not have clothes dryers in Ireland?
No.
And I said, oh, we do, yeah. And they said, well, it must be very expensive. How much is electricity for you know, dryers, clothes dryers? Is that why they put them out?
And so they it's just not a phenomenon in various parts of the world.
And I think...
Would you be a clothesline woman yourself, Mary?
Absolutely, Joe. Yeah. I think every clothesline tells a story about who lives in the house, or might be all soccer jerseys or GA jerseys or little people are living in the house. So I think our clotheslines are fabulous.
It's like an ID, an identity.
Well, it is. It's a little story, isn't it?
Well, that's
there's an opening.
I never thought that's a lovely way of putting it. Really is lovely.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And would you have a sequence to how you hang your clothes?
I would actually, Joe, I'd have them all, you know, whatever, the way you'd hang them, or you'd have all the trousers are hang such a way, or the jeans or the tops or so on, and the sheets as well. And I just love the smell of the clothesline and the freshness and so on.
You see, Mary and Mildred, come in here, Mildred, just briefly. You know when you hear that phrase, quick, get the washing in, quick.
Yeah,
I'd say there's more people have broken legs, hips, wrists, ankles in that rush when they hear that cry through the house. Quick, get the washing in. People fall downstairs.
Trip across the dog or the cat or something.
Yes.
Going
out
and you give the dog a kick and say, get out of the way and they bring in the clothes.
I'd say, Mildred, I'd say there's many a headstone in Ireland that has the inscription. She ran. She fell for Ireland under the clothesline because there was a drop of rain coming. Mildred, will you mind yourself? Mind yourself, Mildred.
I will, Joe. Yeah. And you mind yourself.
I will, of course.
Say hello to Mary there for me.
Okay. And Mary Concannon, you mind yourself as well. Thanks indeed, Joe. The clothesline is open now. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
A lot of people back on the hair. Joe, in Wexford.
Yes.
How long did you rear the hair?
I didn't rear him. My brother reared him for 10 years, he had it.
Wow. What was his name?
He reared him from a... Joey, he used to call him.
Joey, and what did he live on? What did he feed him on?
He fed him on gardeny grass and stuff and carrots and things. And he used to live on chocolate and chips or anything that you were eating, he'd eat.
He lived on chocolate and chips?
Ordinary chips now that you'd be cooking in the fire. He'd often take him out of the brother's mouth, get up and sit on and take it out of his mouth and eat him.
You say he was called Joey. He sounds like one of the two Johnnies. He lived on chocolate and chips.
Yes, you take the chocolate. All he wanted to do was rattle the piece of paper in his hand and the next thing the hair, get up and look for the chocolate and take it out.
Okay, Jeffrey McMaster. Jeffrey.
Hello.
Your sister had a pet 50-odd years ago. What was the pet? A pet hare?
It was a pet hare, and she called him Hartley. Hartley was his name.
Hartley,
yeah.
Okay, and where did he live? Hartley.
He lived in a hutch. She had a hutch. She used to give rabbits too, and this time she didn't have a rabbit. So she used the hutch. The hutch had an area for to sleep in, and then an area to run around. And then sometimes then she'd take him out and let him run around the garden for a while and put him back in again.
And who was the hare hanging around with?
He's on his own most of the time. When she had him, he was. I'm not sure where she got it from. She says her mother gave it to her, but I don't know where her mother got it.
Okay.
But certainly she looked after and treated him the same as a rabbit. Yeah.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Jeffrey McMaster. Philip Gaffney.
Joe, how are you?
You had a business in. There was a stretch of road in the west of Ireland called, Leprechaun Bend.
It was the Leprechaun Bend. So basically, I'd make gift wearing. I've been doing it for years. And there was these two characters back in the 80s that I came across. And I make leprechauns. So I was selling them leprechauns. And they were selling an awful lot of them. And I was asking, I said, how are you doing so well? Well, you see, when we bring the little tour, they had a tour bus,
yeah.
Two brothers, they had a tour bus, and they used to bring these, I'm going to say American tourists, but all kinds of tourists. Yeah. They'd bring them out on the tour up around Mam's Cross, all up around Connemara. And they'd say, now, we're coming up on Leprechaun Bend, and the lad would go, I can't remember why it's called Leprechaun Bend. And the other brother would be down in the field, right? But what he had was he had two hares with little green suits on them. And he used to let them out through a little patch in the field.
Brilliant.
All they as they come around, they just see these two hares darting across the field, right?
And they'd be the leprechauns.
They were the leprechauns.
Fantastic.
And they were saying they had tried it with rabbits, but the rabbits just sat there.
Well,
so they
didn't.
They thought rabbits were no good, hares were brilliant.
Great actors.
But they had a whole routine.
Well done.
Where
a leprechaun band. Okay, Sean Kelly, I want to get Sean in because he's a story from Hong Kong and the hare. Tell us, Sean, quickly.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Yeah, you're at a big business meeting, aviation, Hong Kong.
Yeah, I was negotiating with Cathay Pacific.
Good man.
Famous airline out there.
Yeah.
And just to tie in the clothesline thing, when you're flying into the old airport, you looked out the window. And they had, of course, taller buildings than we had.
Right.
And you could see the washing hanging out. But anyhow, tough day negotiating with this guy. Head of purchasing, and they always give you a hard time.
Yes.
When you're selling.
Yes.
So it took me back to his home for dinner.
Yes.
Shoes off, into the house. And we're looking out. We're up on the 32nd floor.
Wow.
I'm looking out the mountains, the lights. It's lovely.
Yes.
But would you like to come out and see the garden?
Yes, quickly.
I thought, this fella for real.
Yes.
So up we went another few floors.
Yes.
And the roof garden.
And what do we see?
There was this thing hopping around. He said, that's my pet rabbit.
You said?
From Countryman. I knew what a hare looked like.
Yeah. And you said, that's not a rabbit.
I said, that's a hare.
Yeah.
Yeah, I negotiated very hard with the pet shop.
Okay, well done. By the way, how do you tell the difference between a hare and a rabbit? On sound, Niall McMonagall. Thanks, Sean. Broadcast coordinator, Shane Gavin. Producer, Owen McLaughlin. Series producer, Annette Egan. And Sunday night, The Meaning of Life, the wonderful and fascinating Ronan Tyne in Half 10 RTÉ Television. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.